Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. So here we all are, gathered in the great Buddha Hall at Shasta Abbey, Northern California. And this talk follows on from the ceremony honoring Bhaisadra Guru Tathagata, Buddha of Healing. We've been singing and ceremonializing for 45 minutes. So my throat is pretty throaty. loving to reach those high notes that, I don't know about you, I find singing very uplifting and inspiring. It has that quality about it. Coupled with the all the imagery that we sang about, of the blessings and glories and healings of Bhaisadra Guru. So we're full up to the brim. to come to a ceremony such as you all have and participated wholeheartedly, is at heart an act of faith, I feel. Not an act of faith that Bhaisadra Guru will somehow magically descend from a high to heal all that worries and hurts you, as he's the Buddha of healing, but that you came here in faith because it seemed like a good thing to do on a Sunday instead of staying in bed reading the newspapers. Perhaps that's what you might have done. And come here, as I did, to offer my voice and my body, mind to the task of joining together to offer the merit of our singing and walking and bowing for the benefit of all beings. In other words, it's an altruistic act that you're doing something not to gain something for yourself, but to offer that spiritual merit to all beings. And those of you who've actually experienced been the recipient of spiritual merit, you will know that it is not nothing. I see some smiles around here. Some may, listening to this here or in the future, may wonder, well, what is spiritual merit? And I would say there is that which is greater than our ability to see and understand with our ordinary minds. And so it's an act of faith and a receiving in faith too. So a word about faith, since it's a word that's much bandied about and often misunderstood. And of course I have my own take on it, so don't think this is gospel, please. I regard faith as a practice of faith, and it's not about outcomes, about getting something. It's not about having faith or not having faith. It's not like a possession, like, I can't think of something, a car. it's not something you have or you haven't. It's more about living in faith. Not in faith in order to or to achieve something. Not a faith to faith in, like the misplaced faith that your cat will come in at dusk, for example. You'd hope the cat would come in at dusk, but it doesn't necessarily, and you have to take action. The title of this talk is Exercising Faith, the Bodhisattva's Way, or the Bodhisattva's Path, and how it comes down is really, this is about living life the best you can, basically, being the best person you can be, the knack being noting what's there in front of you, acting accordingly, and in the midst of it, looking up. Precepts are obviously in there. We may not all be shining examples of faith. That's not for us to judge, or for others to judge for that matter, because sometimes we fall down, but picking yourself up is all part of the Bodhisattva's path. And sometimes that's the more inspiring part about Bodhisattva acts, is noting that somebody's actually picked themselves up and walked on. Now, this is to do with, I'd say, a sort of misunderstanding or a misunderstanding of what faith is. Faith is. It can often drift into magical thinking or wishful thinking. If I sing loud enough and hard enough, the Vaisadra Guru will heal me, cure me of my ills. In the ordinary sense, no. But in a bigger sense, the exercising of faith is not nothing. And the other way of vacillating towards resignation. It sounds like faith. Oh, well, everything will work out just fine. it is how it is. And you see me, I'm looking down. It is how it is. And you could fool yourself into thinking that's faith. And I would say, yes, it is how it is. And you can see, hear my voice lighten, and in a way I'm looking up. And that is an expression of acceptance. So beware the vacillating between magical thinking and downward looking or resignation. And to reiterate, I think faith is an action, the living of one's daily life. Which, from dawn to dusk, that's what we're up to, isn't it? And finally, and this isn't the end of the talk, you'll be lucky. Faith does not equal certainty. I would say I wing it through life, within parameters, I have to say, in faith, not really knowing that's the case, but thinking about it, I guess that's what I'm, in quotes, doing. And very rarely do I feel certain about what I'm doing or why I'm doing it or even where I'm going sometimes. So I hope you get my drift. Okay. Buddhism generally is full of symbols, and sort of like visual aids that help us to see truths. When I was thinking about this, I wanted to tell you about this hook. There's a on my kesa that holds it all together is a hook and a ring. I think it was Reverend Master G who told us that the ring represents the hara and the hook, she called it a sky hook, which is the unborn Buddha hooking us up. Another way of thinking about up rather than down. And all of you listening to this have a hara, you might say, bounded by your, what's this called? Your ribs, solar plexus, and that there is that which I'm just deciding whether I'm going to say this or not. works along with gravity, which is anti-gravity, and it's a force coming up from the earth that exerts itself through our feet and through our body, up, through and up. And if you were to take a quiet moment standing still and loosening up all your joints, you will notice there's a flow of energy or force coming up through. So there's a little hint, and I didn't make it up. I think it's related to Newton's third law of movement for the scientists amongst us. So there you go. Anyway, I digress, and I promised myself I wouldn't do that. This morning I received an email from a couple, well, him, who are in Bodh Gaya. I'll read it to you. Many thanks for your Facebook item of today. I wrote about Paisadra Guru. On the, actually, it wasn't a Facebook post, it was from my blog. On the altar at home is a Tibetan healing Buddha. It's so true what you said in the article, your choice of words. He heals at the deepest level with Dharma teaching and great compassion. Paisadra Guru. My wife and I have been in Bodh Gaya for a week and are here until November the 3rd so that she can fulfill a vow she made 3 years ago, a vow, a promise that she made 3 years ago while on a temple organized tour. They're both from East Asia. She's from East Asia. He's from Welsh Wales, and he lives there with his wife. We visit the Mahabodhi temple twice a day, morning and evening. Never thought that the day would come when I would be doing meditation daily under the Bodhi tree, exclamation mark. My wife keeps well and her medication seems to have her medical condition stable for the moment. It was good to see you back in June at Throssell, Whole Buddhist Abbey. You look well, and that pleased this old fella. And I thought, well, I may have looked well, but I'm probably aching like the rest of you. I just seem to be able to manifest wellness most of the time. Doesn't mean to say that I don't have creaks and groans of various kinds. So his wife was fulfilling a vow by Sadhguru Guru. Has a vow which appears in the Paisadra Guru Tathagata Sutra. vows tend to be associated with bodhisattvas. They all seem to have a collection, different numbers of. And the couple were on a pilgrimage, which is a journey with religious purpose, a merit-making activity. Who knows what the vow entailed? I don't know. I regard those who, I like to say live by vow, make a promise to them yourselves, or maybe in public, to tread the Buddha's path, to aspire to exhibit the signs of enlightenment, charity, tenderness, benevolence, and wisdom. I regard anybody who's set forth in that way with purposeful intent to be a bodhisattva. And there are many bodhisattvas in this world who aren't really aware of having made any promise or vow or set off on a path. Still bodhisattvas, and I'll talk about a few in a minute. Her medication is, she's stabilized for the time being. So we live in the constant presence of impermanence. Important to note. Said that by Sadhguru is a doctor who cures with the medicine of his teaching. Fundamentally, what he cures is dukkha or suffering, unsatisfactoriness. And I had a little thought that when I read through the vows, well, the Bhaisadra Guru is intent on giving us all those things that we would want and taking away all those things that we don't want. Perhaps a little simplified version. Just going, looking at the time here. So curing dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. And through honouring, respecting, venerating, singing our little hearts out, accruing merit, you might ask, and many might ask, how does merit work actually? And it works through the teaching of the Buddha of anatta, no separate self, no permanent self, nothing separate, no gaps. We are, know it or not, inseparable from each other, and the world is inseparable from us. So that you can see that the life of the bodhisattva, they who give of themselves, knowingly or unknowingly, is to benefit the world, and the world benefits us. If only we could keep away from moaning, criticizing, and looking down. Recognizing what is there within yourself and others does not mean that you go, it is how the world is, the world is the way it is, this is not the Buddhist way. You see what is and then act well. Sometimes not acting. Often not doing. Sometimes the best of actions is non-action. And I think it's in the Shishogi, our way is the non-seeking, non-doing way. One of the vows of the Medicine Buddha is eliminating suffering caused through natural disasters and starvation, for example. And giving, and this I love, and giving to have the inexhaustible things that are required. Isn't that wonderful? And relieve them from all pains and guilt resulting from materialistic desires. Guilt and, what did I say? Guilt and pains of not having what you want. In fact, that's a definition of dukkha, being around people or union with that which is disliked, separation from what is liked, and not get what one wants. That's a definition of dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. And understood from the point of faith, the teaching that cures suffering is to know deeply while heading into daily life, challenges, that there is nothing fundamentally wrong, missing, or out of place. Life is not a mistake, nor is death, nor is illness, nor any of those things. And a further step of faith, and this is hard to believe, and so it's a matter of faith, that we already have within ourselves what is needed to take the next step. We already have what is needed to take the next step. We may not necessarily like or want what we have, right? But that is what we have. And again, the trick is to actually notice. I don't think you need to be a Buddhist to be a bodhisattva. Many people make promises to themselves, maybe silently and within themselves, perhaps as a result of a personal tragedy or friend or relative dies or child has a dreadful illness, which puts people on the bodhisattva path. And we see those reported in the news, people who start campaigns for leukemia sufferers and the like. I just remember that I did the same thing myself when I was 13, when I heard that my brother had been diagnosed with bipolar disease, and I promised in my mind that I would try and I would find the cure. And that conditioned my life absolutely. I wouldn't like to name what the cure is, but when I left the monastery at Eltham Priory at Throssall the first time, I thought, something's changed. I'm no longer concerned about what my purpose is in living. But I didn't have an idea what that might be. But I was at peace, actually, that I had found the purpose for my living. And I've not thought about it since. Here I am, however many years later, a monk. I'd like to talk all too briefly about three people who happen to share similar attributes. They lived on or close to Vancouver Island, Canada, where all the best people and things are. That's a joke. But it's not half bad. I'll include all of Canada there, Canadians. The first is the late Michael Stone, who's a Buddhist teacher, a yoga teacher, who died just about a day or two after I arrived on Vancouver Island in July. He died the 14th of July. Some might say tragically, and this is from his wife, and he left a wife and children behind. He was a Buddhist teacher of some note. He was somebody who poured his life out for the benefit of others, and no mistake. Michael sought, and he, this is his wife speaking, Michael sought psychiatric help and meds after years of resisting them. Listen to this. He had avoided bipolar label for as long as he could, which delayed his treatment. There is stigma around mental illness, and there is stigma around getting help for it. He hoped to heal himself through practice. This is an all too common theme in yoga and Dharma worlds. If you practice deeply enough, you will heal. And if you don't heal, your practice is something, or something is in you is flawed. But meditation is not a panacea and can even be counterproductive for people with severe challenges. Michael's practice was deep, but he had begun to unravel. His already fluid mind became destabilized by meditation. So destabilized and so desperate was he that he wasn't able to get the medication that he needed, so that when he was traveling, he went and got some street drugs and poisoned himself and ended up in hospital completely close to death. And there he died and donated his kidneys and heart, I think. So I guess three other people lived as a result. He gathered people around him, as people do with people who emit a bodhisattva energy. Another one who I met in Victoria, his name is Will Pegg, similarly a teacher in his own right, had by all accounts helped countless people personally and inspired many others. He has a community around him who supports him financially and practically and physically, I think. I am helping him with keeping bright. Salt Spring Island seems to be a focus for all manner of practices and yoga, and I wouldn't be able to enumerate. He is living with cancer, serious cancer, just going for another round of cancer treatment. And our dear Reverend Master Meitan, who is a senior monk of this order, who lives in Victoria, has headed up a meditation group. And I have to say that she had more people coming to her meetings twice a week than I've ever seen in any other meditation group in our order. The numbers were in the late teens, early 20s, each week, twice a week. So obviously something was going on there that attracted people to her. All three, I think, were responding to particularly difficult conditions, whether physical or emotional, all of them, mental. They were responding best they could. They were probably unaware of being what we might call a bodhisattva in that way of talking about it. But they, however, they were living a vow, formally or informally. And I would like to offer this talk for the benefit of all three. And last words go to Reverend Master Meiten. I am coming to say goodbye to her for the last time. I said, well, I'm off to Shasta Abbey. Do you have any advice for the people down there? And she said, try harder. This does not go down well because it sounds like a school report, and mine was always try harder. So I said, oh, what does that mean? Hoping for something to elaborate. And she said, well, to be good trainees. And I asked again, thankfully she was got patience with me, and I said, oh, what does that mean? And graciously she tapped herself on her chest and smiled inwardly, and she said, be at peace, be at peace. That means to cease the struggle, cease the trying to be this way or that way, or to understand or not understand. All these things really don't matter so much whilst we try and do the best we can with what we've got. How's that? Oh, I have one more thing. On my altar, I'd forgotten, I have this little pouch that I travel with. And I looked at it and I thought, oh my goodness, by Sadhguru Dharani, it's on my altar. Did I remember that? No. It says, homage to by Sadhguru, the king of lapis lazuli radiance, to Thagata Arahant, perfectly enlightened one, to the healing, to the healing, to the supreme healing, hail. In there is a picture of Reverend Master Jiyu, who I'm eternally grateful. And further in, is two photographs, one of my mother and one of my father. We have much to be grateful for, to being alive and able to practice together. So in gratitude, homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.